I'm Euro.
I'm Chris.
And this is Fork Bomb.
It is Sunday, July 23rd, 2023. And today's episode is waffling about. We're talking about nothing. No, it's just been, you know what, it's been a long time since we've had the last episode. You know, so it's been a long enough gap that I think at this point we really should just have a sink and talk about the latest that we've been up to, not the latest tech necessarily, but what we've been up to, and I'm sure we'll talk about tech because we always talk about tech and that's our thing.
And we'll have a dedicated topic next time, maybe, who knows?
Who knows? We'll see. We might even have a super duper guest star. But anyway, so how have you been, Chris?
Or this could be the last episode ever. Who knows?
No. Yeah, let's hope that doesn't happen. I kind of do want to hear myself get progressively older as I listen to the podcast.
Oh, yeah,
and my voice will just turn into an old man.
I've been well.
Good. So I guess that's the podcast.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for tuning in. Work's been really fun. I've been getting to install remote desktop software on 500 something odd remote machines. They decided not to sequester me into one department, so now I'm just kind of floating here in DevOps land, floating there in IT land, going here in security land, and I think my title's going to change to principal engineer. So that could be my...
Principal should come with a nice promotion, because that's what a principal is a promoted engineer.
Oh, cool. So that could be my new career path. So I think I might know what I want to be when I grow up.
Good. Better late than never.
What you been up to?
Well, not becoming a principal engineer. I am still in manager land, but that's fun. Actually got to meet one of my coworkers recently because him, Dave, made it down to where I live recently, and so we met up, and it was just nice to finally see somebody face to face. I've been working with people remote for a number of years now, and so it's just really nice to see them face to face and not talk about work and that kind of stuff. So it's been good. Been learning a lot about Azure lately, and all the possibilities of logging. That's still my space, logging. But I've been learning a lot about setting policies for logging, and specifically setting Dyn policies for logging, which is a deploy if not exist, and learning a lot about Sentinel and the query language KQL, which is used in log analytics, and how you get logs in either through leveraging PowerShell or leveraging Python and scripts and things like that, or just policies themselves if it's diagnostic logging. So anyway, it's just a whole another world than what I was used to when I was doing a lot of the Splunk stuff. Still doing Splunk stuff. I'm just kind of doing both now. So a lot of learning here and there in that, and then still doing a lot of the stuff that I normally do as my hobby, still with all the retro stuff and computing. That's what I've been up to lately, work-wise anyway. What have you done that has been interesting lately? Wrong answer.
Well, good night, everybody. I've been playing, until my hands went all wonky, I've been playing a crap load of TIE Fighter on an iMac G3, with the same joystick I had when I was a teenager, hooked up to a 15-pin to USB port adapter, and that's been working brilliantly.
Well, say no more. That's exactly what happened to your hands. You see? Now you just found the answer right there. You were trying to figure it out before, and it is all TIE Fighter's fault with that old joystick.
Well, with one hand. The other hand, I'm not sure. But yeah, the stabbing pain in my palm might be that joystick.
Yikes.
I've got an old iPod from a neighbor for free, and he's gave it to me and said, take it apart, I don't care, have fun. So I was sitting here half assembled, and I just transferred all his music off, and I'm going to get some new refurbished parts and make it into something new and unique.
A few questions there.
Yeah.
Where are you getting the old refurbished parts? And is it the first gen, the one with the thick hard drive and, you know, the spinning drive and the spinning wheel and the black and white screen and all that?
No, it's the latest gen iPod Classic. It's the, I think, 7th gen, I think it was 60 gigabyte iPod.
Okay.
And what else?
My dog is going crazy in the background because, of course, we're recording, so.
I've, it's a color screen and all that and backlit and, yeah, since I've been on this no smartphone thing, I'll explain that in a bit. I've been kind of separating my devices again. So I might actually use this thing little bit of music I have.
So, Chris, I think that I know what to get you for your birthday.
What's that?
You need a utility belt with all your devices. I mean, you know, you might be down to a BlackBerry, an iPod, a Zune, you know? I'm just saying that you might need a utility belt.
Only if it's yellow.
Of course. And it has the bat symbol in the front.
What you been up to?
Other than work and stuff, I've been looking up hardware, and I kind of want to build something unique, but before I talk about that, I've built a gaming rig. I don't want to say it's a monster of a gaming rig. It's certainly the fastest thing I've had. I thought it was time. You know, every decade or so, I just kind of want to keep up to date with all the hardware and stuff. And so my previous machine was from the last decade, and I wanted to build a machine for this decade. And so I decided to go AMD this route this time around. I had built Intel machines for the longest time, and I used to have AMD machines back in the decade before that. It was actually an AMD Athlon first, and then I built another AMD machine, which was a Duron. Anyway, these are like 1.3 gigahertz machines, Athlon Thunderbird and the Duron. I forgot what that was, but I'm pretty sure it was also pretty slow. Anyway, and then after that, the other decades have been Intel machines, you know, Core 2 quads and whatnot. This time around, I wanted to build go back to AMD and build one with a X3D chip. And so those are chips where they actually stack the memory on top of the processor. At least that's the way I understood it. I could be wrong. They actually do this, you know, that's why they call it 3D. It's just, you know, it's not just marketing. They actually do stack the memory on top, making overclocking a little bit difficult because, you know, they're pretty hot. They run pretty hot. And then, you know, that memory in the top there, it does actually affect overclocking and speeds and whatnot. But anyway, the memory is very good, actually. I would say it's really good for gaming. Funny enough, I was watching a documentary on AMD, and they mentioned that the 3D cache technology, it was actually meant for servers, but somebody was like, well, why don't we just try it for games? And then that reminded me of the 3D effects commercials where in the 90s, where they would have this kid flying around and everything, and this chip was supposed to save the world.
Oh, yeah. Instead, we used it to play video games.
Instead, we used it for games, you know? And so his comment, that engineer's comment, reminded me of that. And so I was like, I definitely want it now. Just because he said that, that's it. That's all I needed to know. And so turns out it's actually very good for, you know, low latency gaming and things like that, frame rates. A lot of games are actually very sensitive to latency. So the 3D cache technology used for servers are now being applied for games, and it works. So I wanted one, and I got the a good one for the price, right? So I got the 7800X3D, not the best chip, the best one out there right now as of, you know, today, July 23rd, 2023, is the 7950X3D, which is actually 16 cores. The problem with that is, so AMD has now created, it's like a single chip, but with multiple chiplets inside. So if you delid the processor, you have multiple chiplets, and then you have one in the middle. So you have one in the middle, I believe that's the controller, and then you have these other chiplets. I'm not 100% sure. I'm not the engineer or anything like that. But anyway, this other chip, because mine just has two, has the middle one and then the one on the left. That's the actual cores themselves. So it's an 8-core processor. The 7950X3D has the 3D cache on one of those, and then on the other 8 cores, it doesn't have the X3D on it, which is kind of strange the way that works, because then with Windows, you have to install extra drivers. That's, and then between that and the Xbox game driver, there's, if you use Windows and you hit Windows key G, you actually see the Xbox game bar, and so it utilizes that for figuring out what cores to prioritize if you're playing a game, and which cores to park. So it leverages this AMD driver and then the Xbox game bar to figure out what to park. And then, so essentially you're using just 8 cores, which is exactly what you would want when you're playing a game. And then when you're not playing a game, the scheduler kind of, I guess, unparks them, and then they're back to running. I just thought, you know what? I don't like it. That's over-engineered. It's really dependent on drivers. On you know, like Windows game, Xbox game bar. What if in the future they just decide, hey, you know what? We're just going to make X3D chips with two chiplets with X3D on it. Now you no longer need that whole complexity. So I didn't like that too much, and I just got the processor with a single 8 cores on it, and that was the 7800X3D. So yeah, that's kind of how I landed on that. Other than that, the computer, the gaming rig that I built, DDR5, 32 gigs. I had to learn a lot about timing. I didn't really worry about it before. Now they call it mega transfers. Back then it was just megahertz. So I went from 3200 megahertz to 6000 mega transfers with this, you know, the cache latency and things that I just didn't worry about before. Now I'm over there making sure that I try to get the lowest cache latency possible. And then there's this thing online called the cache latency calculator, and I'm just trying to overclock the RAM so I can get the lowest latency without getting crashes and things like that. That has been kind of fun. I get to learn a lot, and I like it. Yeah. So that's essentially what else? What else on this machine? Li & Li LandCool 3. That's the case. I bought it on eBay, and it came all bent to hell. It looked like either the mail, or I don't know what it was, but they just, either if it was delivered that like that, it was sent, shipped out like that, but it was all bent and everything. I had a bent part of the frame back, took pictures of it, sent it back to the seller, and he just told me to keep it. And then just refunded me. So I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll just bend all this stuff back. The glass was okay on both sides, so yeah, so I'm utilizing that. And let's see, the video card, NVIDIA, I went with NVIDIA. I wanted to go Radeon, you know, because that way I could keep it all AMD, but I found a really good deal on OfferUp for a 3090 Ti 24 gig video card. This thing is a beast. It takes up 3 slots, but I found it for $700, and today, July 23rd, 2023, a 3090 Ti for $700 is not bad. In the future, you guys will all laugh at me, and that'll probably be junkware, but in today's day, that's a great price for that. That's my gaming rig.
It's like you had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, I've been learning a lot.
What are you playing on?
Yeah.
What are you playing on?
What am I playing? I am playing, so I've decided now that I've built this, you know, this great, I guess, updated gaming rig, not super great. The latest stuff is like a 4090, you know, anyway, Intel 14th gen and all that. But now that I have this gaming rig, I was playing Cyberpunk. turning DLSS on and everything, so utilizing all the fancy techniques, I was getting a good RTX set to Ultra, and I was getting ray tracing set to Ultra. I was getting about over 100 frames, like 120 frames constant. So I've been playing that. Decided to play some older titles that I hadn't finished yet. Metro Exodus Special Edition. So the one that, Enhanced Edition, I guess is what it's called. So I've been playing that, and I've been playing The Outer Worlds Spacer's Choice Edition, which has all the enhanced graphics and textures. And yeah, so that's kind of what I've been playing. I bought a monitor for it. I figured, hey, you know what? What's you know, buying all this stuff without the proper screen? So I ended up buying an Alienware OLED 34-inch, 165 hertz. This thing is awesome. As a matter of fact, I didn't really need to build anything. I could have just used my old computer and used the monitor, and I would have been happy. But so totally worth it. I think I paid $1,000 for it. It's worth every single dollar. I love this thing. So yeah, that's the. Let's see. I also went with an Alienware mouse. Because why not? You know, just wanted to pair it, and they did a pretty good job with their Bluetooth mouse. Went ahead and got the Alienware keyboard, because why not? Might as well, already have the mouse and the monitor. The Cherry Switch keys are okay. They're not fantastic, and you as a keyboard person would definitely be able to tell me more about Cherry Switches and whatnot. These are okay. They feel a little spongy, but it's all right. It works. So yeah, got the Alienware headset. Yeah, man, I just kind of kept to one theme, but the main PC is just kind of a hodgepodge of things, and so that's what I've been playing.
That monitor was $1,000.
$1,000, Best Buy open box. Actually, it was a little bit less because I got the open box, and then I had a rebate and all this other stuff. So, you know, so it may be like 900 and something. Man, pricey for a monitor, but man, it's worth
it. Yeah, seriously, you could have bought a single Apple Cinema monitor stand for that $1,000 without the monitor.
I thought about it. You know, I could just sit on the stand and just looked at it. It'd look really pretty.
It would.
Yeah. But instead, I decided to get a whole monitor with stand.
Oh, but is it an Apple stand?
Oh, no, it's not. So, I guess I'm not as cool. Yeah. So that's kind of what I've been playing with. I have another machine that I built for real cheap. It turns out it's another Alienware. So I used to run this channel called Alienware Nut. And that's where this whole Alienware thing came from. And mostly it's because when I was a kid, or not a kid, I guess, I'm pretty old. So I guess when I was a younger person, I always thought that Alienware was like Ferrari or something. And now I just realized that, well, you know, they're pretty good parts, but it's just a bunch of plastic around it, you know, and all that. So, you know, but whatever, it's still in my head. And, you know, it's from back then. And I don't know, I guess I just kind of stuck with it. And I don't mind the plastic anymore or anything like that. So I was just looking on Mercari, and I found an Alienware Aurora R12 for $100. It didn't come with a CPU or SSD or video card, but it came with everything else: the motherboard, the liquid cooler, the fans, the power supply, obviously, and all that stuff. So I'm like, what? $100 for this thing? And so I ended up selling my old Aurora, which was an R7, and I got a great price for it. And I bought this R12 for $100. Bought a Radeon 6700 XT 12 gig for $100. That was another crazy deal that I couldn't believe that I got. It was actually listed as untested and could potentially be broken. So I took the risk and bought it. And guess what? It works just fine. Flawless. I've been playing with that. I bought an Xbox controller and using an Xbox controller, not didn't buy anything. And I'm playing it with Bluetooth, and I hooked it up to the TV, and it's been great. I've been playing Deep Rock Galactic on it with my brother, and it's just been really fun. So it's kind of like having a better than a game console, I would say, because the hardware is, in my opinion, better than what an Xbox Series X would be able to provide. So yeah,
very cool.
That's it.
Here's something I haven't told you.
Hmm?
For my password management, I switched from using Nextcloud passwords to Vault Warden, which Eric turned me on to. And it is a re-implementation of the open source Bitwarden server. So there's the big three for password managers right now is LastPass, which if you're using them, flee. They were breached, and it turns out that things that were encrypted weren't. For example, your username on various websites. And things that were encrypted weren't encrypted as well as we thought they were. For example, as time went on, it required more and more hash iterations to be considered secure. And LastPass wasn't by default upping those hash iterations. They made it a manual process and didn't force you to do it. So, yeah, not great. They've got a pretty big black eye. Then there's 1Password, which is entirely commercial, and then there's Bitwarden, which is every bit as good as 1Password, but is open source. So if you want, you could even self-host it. I was using Nextcloud's password manager, but I don't like how limited it was. For example, you can only do passwords. You can't do secure notes. You can't do entries specifically for credit cards, for SSH keys, for all that stuff. So my fiance, she was on LastPass, and I said, okay, we got to get you off of this. Tell you what I'm going to do. I've been meaning to do Bitwarden anyways. Let me self-host it. Bitwarden, their self-hosted version, it's written in .NET and Mono, and it's this big whirling dervish of services all put together. It's kind of heavy.
Mm-hmm.
The neat thing about Vault Warden is it's the same features, basically the same interface, fully compatible with the Bitwarden clients, mobile, desktop, all that stuff, which also open source. But one, you don't have to get a license key, which they make you do even for the free version. Two, it's a single binary written in Rust. So it's really, really easy to self-host, to deploy as a single Docker container, much easier than it would have been using the official Bitwarden setup. So I moved myself to that, and I moved Elise to that, and that got me thinking, well, now that I'm hosting somebody else's passwords, I better take my home lab a bit more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So I added another Proxmox node. So now it's a 3-cluster Proxmox node instead of 2. If you have a 2-cluster and you lose one, it'll still run, but it goes into read-only mode. You can't turn anything on, you can't turn anything off, you can't add new servers, you can't shut servers, you can't make any changes. So I added a third node. So now it's 2 Intel Nooks and an old Chrome box that I swapped the firmware on. And now I'm looking into getting some proper monitoring going. I keep trying to deploy a proper Grafana Prometheus setup. And that's always a giant pain.
I was going to suggest Zabbix, but...
Oh, no. 2012 called. It wants its monitoring solution back.
Yeah.
And it's just not good for a Kubernetes-style setup. I'm not running just single servers running single services. I'm doing K3S with containers and all this other stuff. And Zabbix just comes from a time when you had, you know, a server that you just ran the thing on the server, and that was it.
Well, I mean, you could monitor applications and things like that. They're services. I've monitored VMs before and cloud VMs, but sure, yeah. I mean, Docker and stuff. I've never done that.
And so that also has me wanting some new hardware, because what I have now, I've been running since 2015.
Gaming rig.
So I've been looking into. I want to get some new mini PCs. I mean, either thinking of going with something from B-Link. Oh, by the way, Intel Nooks aren't going to exist anymore. They're, Intel is no longer going to produce them.
I heard. Yeah, that's sad.
So I have two i5 Nooks and that one little Acer Chromebox. So yeah, I want to get either one beefy little PC or three, I don't know, slightly less powerful PCs, but still more powerful than what I have now. I don't know. But I'm working on making it more resilient.
Have you thought about just hosting the password manager on a cloud solution instead?
I don't want to.
Okay. No, I was just thinking that, you know, potentially, you know, if you get broken into or the place floods or it catches on fire or something.
It's all backed up. I can restore it on any hardware, anywhere. It's all backed up.
It's backed up to the cloud.
Yeah, it's all backed up to S3.
Got it. Okay. At least that.
Yeah, yeah. I've got the main Proxmox disk images, the important ones. Those get backed up weekly. I keep daily local snapshots. And then there's also the Longhorn distributed file system file backups. Those get backed up to S3 as well. What else? Yeah, I've got backups out the wazoo. I'm not worried about that.
Okay. Well, good. Sounds like you got everything going. I hope that LastPass has since fixed their issues. So
I wouldn't trust
to gain customer credibility again or credibility. to gain customer loyalty and, you know, those things type things. Trust is very important. I would hope that they fix their issues.
I wouldn't trust them. I mean, they're not the same entity that they were when they started. The people that founded it are long gone. Then they were sold to LogMeIn, and then LogMeIn sold them to some investment company. I wouldn't trust them.
Okay.
And anything that you have to trust should honestly be open source.
You know what I used to do back in the day? This was probably a good back in 2012 type thing. I used to have, what was it? I had a Dropbox with a OpenCrypt file. And so every time I wanted to get a password or something. Oh, and then it had an Excel file, and the Excel file was password protected inside this OpenCrypt that was also password protected inside my Dropbox. And I can no longer open anything because I lost the password of that OpenCrypt and I have no idea what it was.
Duh.
Yeah, it's gone. I have the file, but, you know, I would need like a master hacker or something. And back then I remember, the password was set randomly with like a mouse move. You know, you would move the mouse around a bunch of times and it would randomly generate letters and numbers and symbols and things like that. Yeah, so I'm not going to remember that, and that's too bad, because I had some pictures in there and all this stuff. It was neat, but yeah, that's what happened.
What secrets it may hold?
Yeah, I don't know. Could have been, you know, the way to save the world or something, or cure cancer, but we won't know, and so we're all screwed, because I can't remember the password.
Thanks, Euro.
You know, another thing that I've been doing outside of, you know, building these machines. I've been reading old tech magazines. I've been reading a magazine called Boot. You may have heard of it. And they eventually became Maximum PC, and they're still around. And so it's been really fun reading the 1990s issues, late 90s. That's really because the stuff before late 90s, you're talking about pre-3D acceleration and all that stuff, which is okay. And, you know, we've talked a lot about retro stuff here. But I'm wanting to just read up on Pentium 2s and AMD K6s and all that stuff. So I've been reading late issues of Boot. And besides, Boot wasn't even around, I don't think, in the early 90s. It was just kind of like it only lasted a couple of years and then it became Maxim PC. So I've been reading that, and it's just really fun to see even the advertisements where they would have, computer with three CRTs in front of a, you know, like in a desk, right? And in the front cover. And then they would have somebody playing Quake 3 with three monitors and, you know, those these big CRTs. And man, that's that's just a different time, you know? I definitely remember it.
If you're reading that on archive.org, right?
They have some on archive, so you can, you know, flip through the pages and everything. Google has them as well. Google has some of the magazines you can read, I think up to mid-2000s. So that's fun. That's a, you know, great period.
Google. I didn't know that Google kept a magazine collection.
Yeah, they have a magazine collection there. So you can flip around and things, and it's free. It's been great. Really, you know, neat to read about. They talk about, you know, Windows 95 and then Windows 98 and updating to OS R2 Windows 98 because, you know, stuff had broken before they released it broken or something. I don't know. USB drivers and everything. But you know what I love is the video card section where they'll talk about like the S3 Verge, but the latest thing will be, oh, you know, this card comes with 16 megs of RAM. Whoa. Yeah. And they're all priced accordingly, you know, $350 here and $400 there. Yeah.
The old 3DFX advertisements.
They have a lot of those, the magazine ads. Some companies too that I haven't even thought about in forever. There was a company called Number 9, I think it was the name. I think it was a number. Number 9, I think was the name of the company. Yeah. And they made a 128-bit card. Anyway, so it's just interesting reading all the articles. I totally forgot that those cards existed. Turns out that for gaming, one of those sucked, and so this person bought, you know, the expensive video card, number 9, and he complained to the Maxim PC Watchdog, which was a section where you would complain to, you know, the magazine, you know, and then the editor would reach out to the company and, you know, try to get answers. It turns out this guy bought an expensive card, and it's not good for 3D gaming. It's only good for like 2D, and he's like, you know, he almost wanted his money back. And the representative just told him, "Oh yeah, our card doesn't do that. You should buy a 3DFX card instead."
Yeah.
Wow. He just totally, like, you know, it's interesting to read that, you know. So anyway, it's been really fun reading that.
Yeah, archive.org's magazine reader is really cool. I used to have fun reading Byte magazine out of there. Hey, didn't you tell me about what was that retro proxy that you told me about recently?
Yes, that's right. So this is a service. I forgot the name of it. I gotta look it up. But Michael MJD, that's a channel on YouTube. The guy is super knowledgeable. I highly recommend anybody to watch his stuff. He talks a lot about Microsoft and older operating systems. He recently did an episode on BOS.
Protoweb.
I'm sorry?
Protoweb.
Protoweb, that's right. I knew it started with a P. So he did a whole segment on Protoweb. So basically, it is kind of like the Wayback Machine, but you're just using a proxy to navigate to different websites that are stored or cached or cached on their server. And so as you go to those websites, it just translates the address, right? So if you go to Yahoo, it'll take you to the old Yahoo, the one that they have in their, you know, cached, and 3DFX and 3D Realms, and there's a bunch of other sites. Really, really neat to see, you know, Web 1.0. And another really cool thing is that you could actually set the proxy settings to, depending on what speed you want to see these websites at, you could potentially set it to either T1 speed, which is, you know, for these sites, they're pretty lightweight. You know, nowadays, they would be super fast. And back then, a T1 connection was actually pretty fast. For loading Web 1.0 pages, it's fast. But another setting you could put is a different proxy set it to 56K speeds. So you could definitely experience what it was like to navigate the web in the 90s and early 2000s with a 56K modem. Really fun. Oh, by the way, Chris, they have Homestar Runner there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, the I was watching the video that you sent me about it, and I'm reading the about page right now. What's unique about it compared to, say, the Wayback Machine or other proxies that would just use the Wayback Machine is they don't try to host everything, but what they do host, and they have a full browsable directory of what they do host, is all complete. So you won't have missing images, broken pages, and they even built their own search engine. So you can go to old Google, old Yahoo, old AltaVista, and they actually work. It's searching through what they already host, and they just theme those to look like Google, Yahoo, whatever else. So it's a really interesting take on it.
Yeah. And you know what? It's advertisements and everything. Like, they've brought everything. It's just really neat. You know, it's pretty complete. As long as you stay within their, you know, their bubble.
Right.
And, you know, it's really, really complete. You're absolutely right. I mean, the Wayback Machine is fantastic. I actually donated recently to the archive. Try to do that every year. I encourage everybody to do the same. Great service, you know, that they provide. But it's incomplete. Sometimes you get these broken links and things like that. Not here. This is the full thing. Although, probably like a microcosm version of the Wayback Machine, which has way more websites, but what's there is complete.
The way they describe it is an interactive museum, not a file archive. They even have reserved FTP servers and their contents. There's a what's it called? Hang on. Retrozilla. Where was it? Nope. RETRO. There's a web browser you can download on a modern PC that will just automatically use it. And I can't find it now. Oh, the proto web browser.
And it already has the proxy settings built in, so it's just install and go.
Yep, and it works on both retro and modern PCs, so that's really cool. Their homepage has a cool crab with sunglasses, as is required. Oh, and their search engine is called Comet, which is a nod to Halt to Catch Fire.
That's right. I was about to say that if you weren't going to mention it. When I heard that, it was great, you know, to have that throwback to Halt and Catch Fire.
I wonder if there's a way that there is a donate button. Definitely going to donate to this. I wonder if there's a way that I can also help contribute at a more technical level.
You got to use the power of those nooks to load some of those websites. I'm sure if you load Apache on there, you can host some of those sites. I think they host already like 11,000 sites, I believe.
Oh, wow.
It's not that small.
Yeah, I cannot wait to get this going on my... actually, I'm going to run that protoweb on my PowerBook 540C.
Do it.
That's going to be amazing.
You know what's going to be super amazing? Running GeoCities on there. Oh, there's some GeoCities sites. There are some GeoCities sites, and in the bottom, you see some of the, you know, the little logos for the web browsers, and it'll say something like, you know, best viewed on Netscape Navigator or something. It's great. they have the visitor counters, too.
Yes, yes. They even preserve the visitor counters.
I can't wait to see the under construction GIFs.
Oh, man. I'm doing that tonight.
Yeah, so thank you, Michael MJD, for hooking us up to that.
And man, we should try to see if we can get him on the podcast.
That'd be fantastic. I've been watching some of his stuff on loading Windows, but not release Windows. These are beta versions. So he would do a beta version all the way up to release versions of Windows. So that was pretty neat to watch. Like kind of like a Vista history, but through betas. Mm. So, which Vista used to be called Longhorn, that was the code name, and just watching the it slowly come up to release, and how they scrapped their code base in the middle of it, and then, you know, started all over again. That was really neat. Yeah, so they had some of that. He has some of that, Windows XP and all that. He does a lot of Windows stuff, but it's just so neat to see all his stuff. His content's been really good.
Mm-hmm. I also like to try to get Oliver Malini, the founder of ProtoWeb, on. It'd be pretty fun if we could reach out to him.
That would be fun. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and speaking of browsers, so I wanted to tell you that I've completely made the switch over to Firefox. I used to be huge into using Chrome, and I forgot what I used before that. It might have been Internet Explorer, but anyway, I've made the switch to Firefox. Super happy. Hoping not to switch back. I have all my content there. I'm using the Firefox Cloud and use all the extensions, and I love how I can switch between operating systems, and I don't even have to install the browser most of the time, because most of the time they come with Firefox.
Yeah, it's gotten really, really good. Like 2017, mm-hmm. when they released Firefox Quantum, that's when things really took off.
Yeah.
They've caught up speed-wise with Chrome. They definitely don't track you as much as Chrome. My only minor complaint is every time I turn off that stupid pocket suggested sites on the new tab page, every time I install an update, it turns back on.
Oh no.
So
write an angry letter.
That actually pissed me off enough that
to switch.
I switched to LibreWolf.
Okay.
LibreWolf is a Firefox fork.
Fork.
But
it's like Pale Moon and all that.
It goes out of its way to not track you, to the point to where there will be some things that are just broken that you'll have to one by one re-enable features for. But their main features, reading from their site, is no experiments, adware, annoyances, or unnecessary distractions. Default search engine is DuckDuckGo. uBlock Origin is already included. It's already has a bunch of privacy hardened stuff. For example, they have web canvas set up to where canvas can't be used to fingerprint you. And you have to, on a site by site basis, if you decide there are features that you need for web canvas, you can enable it for those images. Otherwise, you'll just get a garbled looking image. One example of that is using. If you do a hotel search on Google Maps, the little hotel pictures are actually drawn in Canvas, so those look all weird and wonky. They do things like they disable WebGL because that can be used for fingerprinting. Firefox Sync is disabled. You have to specifically add something into the overrides file to turn it on. So I'm really liking their effort, and they update in lockstep with Firefox. So it is Firefox, and it's not a divergent fork like Pale Moon is. It is Firefox, but just really, really locked down.
So all good things. The only thing is that, and I'm sure you can change it, and I'm sure it's a very simple setting. I think that Brave Search might be a little bit more privacy centric than even DuckDuckGo. So just something to consider.
Cool. I will look into it. Thank you. Brave Search.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, Brave Search. Brave Search even has its own browser and things like that, but just the search itself is pretty good. It's what I have set to my default, and it actually works pretty well. Very few times I've had to go back to Google or anything like that to actually search, and they're very good on privacy. But then again, I'm sure my privacy isn't great since I'm using Firefox with all its features and everything. So main fork, you know, but
I still love Firefox. We are dangerously close to becoming a web monoculture, where with only one rendering engine that's development is controlled by a gigantic advertising company. By using Firefox, by supporting Firefox, we are doing a small part to prevent that from happening.
Agreed. And Firefox, you know, and its roots and everything on Netscape, It's just neat. It has a great legacy. This pocket thing has never bothered me. I don't know. I guess I just leave it on and it never comes up.
It's when you when you open up a new tab and it says recommended by Pocket, and it's just like, I've opened mine up. The first thing it says is, the biggest waste of time we regret when we get older. The credit card is worth its weight in gold. Best credit card for 2023.
Yeah, yeah.
The best way to reheat pizza that. And some things you should never do. Fuck, get that shit out of my face.
That's the first one that came up, by the way. It's the best way to reheat pizza and some things you should never do. I honestly never really gave it much thought about it being there, but now that I know about it, or now that you told me about it, it's probably going to bother me.
I get that it's a revenue source, but when I turn it off, keep it off.
There's that's actually something I'll give Microsoft Edge for. So Edge actually allows you I don't know if it stays, but I think it does. When you turn it off, it just stays, I think, in focused mode or something.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't use Edge enough. I heard it got much better. Now it uses the Chrome engine, actually.
Yeah.
And it's gotten pretty good. Bing search is actually way better than it used to be. Now that it has, it's powered by, I think, ChatGPT-4 or something like that. Bing search now uses, but using Firefox.
Christ, the amount of ads you see when you first launch just the bog standard Edge. It's an assault on the senses.
There's a bunch of questions it asks too, and it's like, it doesn't leave you alone. No, do you want to switch Bing to Bing search, and you want to do this and that? It's like, leave me alone. Yeah. So, yeah.
I'm also using the Flatpak version of LibreWolf, which is nice
because updates.
I don't want to have to deal with installing a separate repo. It's not in the main. It's not in the main repositories of most Linux distributions, so. I'm using the official Flatpak image, and it works great.
So do you use the Firefox, what do you call that, the sync? Do you use Firefox sync?
I use that.
Yeah, because that for me would be a deal breaker if it was not available.
Yep, it works. You have to enable it in the overrides file, but then after that, it works. Oh,
okay.
I've been waffling a bit, so I want to pass it to you, but there is another thing I want to mention afterwards.
Okay.
What else you got going on?
Well, I had taken some notes here just in case I would forget what I'm talking about. And the last thing that I have on here is I found the Ultimate Mouse that I like, and the name is the Razer Viper Ultimate. And this thing is pretty solid.
Razer Viper Ultimate. Look it up.
Yeah. I'm sure it's not great for the hand. Actually, the one that I use for work is really good too. It is a Logitech. I don't have the name of it here. And this has been fantastic. Nice. It's one of those ball mouses. And it has this thing you just attach to it. It's a magnet.
And oh, wow.
Kind of stays like this. This I use for work. This thing is awesome. Bluetooth. And you can just charge it there. Lasts forever.
Trackball?
Trackball. Oh, yeah. I've been using Trackball since the 90s. I'm not going back. I love it. But I also... recently bought this Razer Viper Ultimate, and I know it's all gamer and everything, but really I want to focus on how smooth it glides. I've never had that such smoothness before. It's like, what? Yeah.
It sounds like a finishing move.
Yeah. Ultimate Viper Ultimate finishing.
Razer Viper Ultimate!
I know. It's got such a gamer name to it, but I've never had something glide so smooth across the screen. It's just amazing.
Just really high DPI, or?
Yeah, I think it could go up to 20,000 DPI. I don't know, man, but this thing, even just moving across the surface is smooth. It's got these like extra pads on it, and it just really helps with the glideness of it's like moving around butter or something. So this I'll use as a standard mouse. And then the other one, the work mouse, the Logitech, that one's just, you know, the standard ball mouse that. I don't want to use anything else. Back then, I used to use this 3-button, you know, it was like white, beige, Logitech something. I'm sure it had some crazy name back then. And it was a serial mouse, and I haven't stopped using trackball mouses since.
I'm currently using my Microsoft IntelliMouse from 2006.
The sensors on those, watch out for the... So the laser is actually a camera, and they're not really good on reflective surfaces, but on some of those models, the camera might go out, and it won't track well.
Well, this one's still going strong.
Good.
I love it. But I want to get a vertical mouse to with the onset of some wrist pain. I want to see if that'll help.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely, that's important.
I stopped using Pop! OS on my main laptop.
No.
Because the latest Debian came out, Debian Bookworm, about a month or two ago. And so I figured, why not, since Linux Mint Debian Edition, which is honestly my favorite version of Linux Mint, none of the Ubuntu garbage, but still more up-to-date packages than stock Debian. I decided, well, while I'm waiting for that, why not run just plain Debian, see how it works. So first I tried the KDE version. It's KDE. I don't like it. And then I switched to GNOME and or installed the GNOME version, since that's what I'm used to these days. And it's really, really solid. GNOME by itself looks beautiful.
It does.
The Adwadia theme looks amazing.
It does.
This one comes with kernel 6.1, GNOME 43, and is just a good, solid, stable release. And with using Flatpak, the apps that I care about are going to stay far more up to date than what's in Debian's repos. The only issue I had was getting it hooked up to my AirPods. I had to install some rando package from some...
It's compromised.
From some PPA, but not the full package, just a single .so file and copy it someplace to get AAC support for the AirPods. But besides that, it's working great on my HP Dev 1.
You've compromised the OS, Chris. That's it. Your passwords, everything, all that hard work.
I didn't have to add any extra repos, so that was nice. Well, I did add the sync thing repo, because I want that to be kept up to date.
That's it. Except the front door.
But yeah, it's... I'm liking Debian, and I think I'm going to roll with that until the next Linux Mint Debian comes out.
Okay. I've noticed that, for me anyway, and I'm sure every single Linux person is just gonna hate me, but I feel like when people talk about different distros, correct me if I'm wrong too, you've been around it way, way longer than I have. It just feels like, this distro here comes with whatever, X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, that's just that. I just don't understand. And maybe you can help me understand. When you go distro hopping, is it just a collection of software? That's really what you're distro hopping? Unless you're hopping from an actual, you're jumping from Debian to Red Hat that utilizes RPMs, and the software might be different. And the commands, even some of them, use a yum install and things like that. I don't know. It just seems like a collection of software. When I go online and I'm like, I'm just going to look up a YouTube to see what this new distro comes with. And then typically they mention things like, oh, well, this one comes with GNOME 44 and this, that, and the other stuff. I haven't been super impressed with to me, it feels like a collection of software. Oh, it comes with this kernel and that and everything. And I just feel like all the stuff could be put together. I've only been truly impressed with Garuda, where it seems like the developers just went so far from the standard path that it just made it something different. But hey, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know anything and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's a collection of software for the most part. And they're only really differentiated in little additions they might make to the kernel or which package manager they choose. You could make your own Linux distribution if you wanted to, but with your own package manager. And then there are derivatives of distros. Like Ubuntu is a derivative of Debian.
Yeah. Elementary.
But for the most part, there isn't that much differentiating most modern distros these days. When you look at something like Void Linux, that is a true from scratch distro. They're doing something very different. No systemd, the way that they do their service management is very light. They give you the choice of glibc or musl, musl, however you pronounce it. Yeah, you're right.
Have you heard of that Fusion OS where it brings all the various distros?
Oh yeah, Vanilla OS.
Vanilla. That's what it is. Yeah, I thought that was neat. And maybe that's like the one distro to rule them all, and one distro to bind them, or something.
That's
Lord of the Rings reference.
That is something truly different too. Also, Vanilla OS is an immutable distro. And it's atomic, immutable meaning that the file system itself, besides what's in your home folder, can't be changed by any process running on there. You have to go through some extra hoops to change it. And atomic meaning that when you try to make a change to it, it's either an all or nothing change. So let's say you try to do a system update and that system update is one change, but it fails halfway through. Well, everything that was going to be applied does not get applied. It's an all or nothing change.
That's great. And that's, I guess they would have to do that if they're going to be hosting so many different distros. The way that I heard it, it kind of functions a little bit like by using bottles, I guess. Where you would run software in sort of containers or in bottles, I think they call it. So that's how you can run GNOME software with KDE software and Debian with Red Hat RPMs and everything, is because it utilizes that whole bottling. So I guess that makes sense. You run an update and you don't want it to, one thing breaks another.
Right. Vanilla OS is actually Ubuntu based.
Oh no. Yeah, I wanted to give it a try just to, just kind of unify everything and just say I run Linux. I don't have a particular distro or anything. I just run Linux.
It does look fun. And I think you end up running a whole bunch of things in Docker containers and
Yeah, I think so. So I wanted to try it, it seems fun. I'm still using Pop. It's got everything I need for especially on laptops. It's just really neat because you can do the hybrid switching between graphics, and it already comes with a fast search. I know you can add all this stuff later on if you use a different distro. This just comes with it, just like that collection of software. So it already binds the keys that I wanted, and it has the dock that I wanted. And I'm waiting for Pop 2404, whenever that comes out. I guess it's going to come out there. But, Pop is usually a little bit later than the Ubuntu release. Since it's based on that.
I like the answer to this question on Vanilla OS's FAQ. Is there any telemetry? They say, no, we don't care about your data. Ours is better.
Ours is better. That's good. Yeah, I'm gonna give it a try. What would be funny is I bet you half the people that run Vanilla run it in a virtual environment. So it's like virtualception or something.
Right.
Yeah. So great.
I don't think I have a lot more else to talk about right now.
Me either, and we've been talking for an hour, and see, we've done a whole episode about nothing. Just talking, and I love it.
I'm excited to try out the new MorphOS, but I haven't started yet, so I have nothing to say about that.
When you install MorphOS, I will install Haiku.
I'm already running Haiku on actual hardware.
Ooh.
And I'm keeping it updated.
Whoa, all right, I have to do the same. Except you have good hardware to run it on. I don't. So I have to figure this out. But you have good hardware, and that is just such an awesome system.
Dig out that netbook that I gave you. It runs perfectly on there.
The EPC?
Yeah.
We tried that. Didn't we try that before and it was hanging on the startup? I thought we tried that. That sounds... I think we did that. It was an earlier release. Might have been like some... I don't know. Haiku's been on beta forever. But it might have been like R2 or something.
I've had Haiku running on that machine years ago.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe I tried to update it or something and it wouldn't get past the boot up. Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely give it a try. I certainly have that machine available, so I can give that a try. Yeah, Haiku. I mean, I know we did a whole episode on it, so I'll refer everybody to an earlier episode that we did on Haiku. Great operating system. I really do hope that it becomes everything that BOS wanted to be, which is pretty much the standard OS. Did you know that BOS actually tried to package, and they did successfully on like one vendor, and then Microsoft completely thwarted that. But they actually were able to package BOS with a hardware vendor.
Ooh.
I think it was HP. I could be wrong. I think it was HP back in the late 90s. They packaged it with BOS. Yeah.
Very
and they,
cool.
they did the dual boot.
I never knew that.
Yeah. They packaged it with Windows 98, and so you could dual boot, and that's where Microsoft had a problem. They did not want you to be able to dual boot, and they were dual booting. I think they took them to court, and I don't know what happened. Well, either way, they stopped doing the dual boot. So they still included BOS in a different partition, but you had to install the drive. There was like a bunch of different things you had to do in order to dual boot, including using a floppy disk. That's how you would dual boot and everything. And I guess people didn't like that. And anyway, it's just too bad because BOS was such a unique operating system for the time.
Haiku became everything that BOS wanted to be OS.
Yeah, nice. Is that a haiku?
I wish.
All right. Well, I got nothing else, but I do hope that we can get more episodes, more constant. We'll see. Life is kind of getting in the way a little bit, but yeah, I think we can certainly keep it going.
All right. Well, good episode. Out of stuff to talk about. I'm sick of your face. I'll see you later.
See you, Chris. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Or we could also do the bum 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 bum